So today we'll learn some Rashi's in Parshas Yisro, Ramat and Tara. Come, Moshe, Mark, sit down. Come. Okay. So, Har Sinai has many, many different layers to it. And part of appreciating Har Sinai is unpacking the different layers. Obviously, there's a legal moment. Hashem is delivering His law, the commandments, as there is a Dibros. Hashem is trying to abolish the pagan notion of visuals, that God has visuals, and Hashem has any. That's stressed very, very prominently in Devarim when we're about to enter a pagan cesspool. Hashem's saying, remember, you didn't see anything, you heard things, you didn't see any pictures, you didn't see any sights. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, of course, trying to build Yirat Shamayim. That's why there's a lot of fear, not the distance, the hierarchy, the difference between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A lot is happening. But part of what's happening at Har Sinai is also that it's a moment of a wedding between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am. Oh, hi, welcome, good morning. It's a wedding between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. And what parts of the description convey that this is a wedding? We're talking about the different layers of Har Sinai, transcendence, lack of visuals, legal moments, but it's also a wedding between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. And the aspects of a wedding are enunciated in Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim refers to Har Sinai as Beis Yimi, Cheder HaRasi, Ba'atarash Yedulayim Abiyam Chasin Aso, Abiyam Simchas Libo, Hevi Anil Beis Hayayin, V'Diglo Alayahava, which is the intersection between Bamidbar and Shavuos, Diglo Alayahava. So there's a lot in Shir HaShirim that this is a wedding between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His people. We treat our relationship with Hashem as a marriage. And Shir HaShirim forces us, wants us to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our husband and Am Yisrael as His bride. And that wedding took place in Chazal. That's what's developed at Shavuos. That Mitzrayim was the Erisim. That's why during Michas Omer we're still at a very raw stage of our relationship. So the carbon is Seorim, is barley, but now there's an advance. So what in Rashi? We're going to discuss some Rashis in Parshas Yisro from the Kriyas HaTara Mirz Hashem on Monday, which we'll all be really awake for. What in Rashi highlights the wedding? So the truth is there are one explicit Rashi, but two allusions to it, if you follow Rashi carefully. The explicit Rashi, and Rav Lichtenstein would talk about this a lot, Rashi writes, let me find it here, Likrasar Elokim. And Moshe took the people out, Likrasar Elokim. What's the lesson? A pasuk where it says, Moshe HaSam, Likrasar Elokim. So the word Likras means that there's two bodies in movement rendezvousing. Remember, the train starts from Detroit, the train from L.A. This is sounds like, I know I'm bringing back nightmares from high school, but at what point will the two trains intersect? So the cross means there's two bodies in motion, Rashi says. So what's happening here? Magid Shashchina Yatza Likrasa. So they're not just walking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is walking to them. Rashi writes, Kechasan Hayotze Likras Hakala. So that's the explicit Rashi. That's the word Rashi. Kechasan Hayotze Likras Hakala. And in Shir HaShirim, you have the Chasan pursuing the Kala very frequently throughout the different stages of Shir HaShirim. One day you'll be time for the single boy, Shir HaChasan, you'll come down from the Chuppah to meet your Kala and bring her under the Chuppah. Rashi feels that this is also inherent in a Pasuk in Hazinu. Hashem Misinai Ba. Not Hashem Lisinai Ba, but Hashem Misinai Ba. So Misinai suggests that Hashem is walking from Har Sinai to them, rather than Lisinai Ba, that Misinai Ba, Hashem is walking to meet them. That's Rashi's idea. So this is the explicit Rashi. What are the two allusions in Rashi? So one of them is a favorite, famous medrash that Rashi truncates. And sometimes when Rashi truncates some words from the medrash or from the Gemara, it changes the meaning. Whenever you pull off an adjective or a modifier or a phrase, it could change the meaning. So, but the Jewish people, they were standing at the foot of the mountain. Tachti Sahar means that the literally mountain has a foot, has a baseline, base camp. They were Betachti Sahar. Rashi gives a different shot. After he provides the first shot, if you pshuto beragle har, umed rasho, shenitla shahar mimkomo, the mountain was raised up, v'nichpa aleim kegiga. So Betachti Sahar doesn't mean they were at the foot of the mountain, they were under the mountain. As the mountain had been hoisted into the air, and they were under the mountain. Shenitlash haharmi mekomo v'nichpe aleihem kegigas. And what's missing in Rashi? What does the Gemara say? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu hoist the mountain? Come on, the Gemara in Shabbos, what does he tell them? Accept the Torah, and if not, you'll be buried alive. Rashi doesn't quote that part. So in Rashi's description, there's just a mountain hovering above them. No threats, no talk about death, no burial, no coercion. Some want to claim, the Maharal, that this is a chuppah. That the mountain hoisted above the people is a chuppah, bringing you into a chuppah, a very symbolic gesture of a husband telling his wife, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to protect you. Come into my house. The mountain is a protection. No threats here. We're just so used to the Gemara that the second we think of levitating mountains, we think of asteroids and Armageddon, and we're going to be abolished and pulverized. No, just a mountain above them. Interestingly enough, the phraseology even that Rashi quotes is from the Gemara Kigigas. If you are hoisting a mountain as a weapon, it should have been kicharev, not a weapon of threat. It should have been kigigas is a barrel of wine, very symbolic for weddings. There's a dance around barrels of wine. So it'd be perfectly, let's say we were in the desert in the ancient period and I wanted to show something symbolic that we were getting married. I'd lift a barrel of wine. We need a chuppah. Walk into the barrel of wine. It would be very, wine is happiness, wine is joy. We're going to build a family in Ve'agefen, in Ve'agefen. So Rashi takes out that phrase and changes the meaning. And this is the second point that Rashi describes the chuppah in our Sinai. The third illusion is even cooler. And when you go to a game, not that anyone here likes going to sports games, but I've been told that there are people I like going to. It's really important where you sit. And it's really important what side of the field you sit on. Sometimes that can make a really big difference. Want to catch a ball, you want to sit in the third baseline because most righties will foul off. It's really important where you sit. Where were the Jewish people standing at Har Sinai? Big mountain. A lot of area. Where is the mezzanine section? We shouldn't say that because unfortunately the mezzanine section in Meron collapsed. But where do they put the mezzanine section for the Jews to sit or stand? So Rashi tells us, we don't know this. Neged Ahar, Rashi says, they were facing the mountain. That makes sense. Proximate to the mountain. But where were they? So Rashi writes, Lim Mizracho. They were east of the mountain. And Rashi etymologically says the word Neged means facing the east. Well, not really facing the east. You're looking west, but in the eastern area. Or Neged Ahar. Why is it important for the Jews to be in the eastern part of Har Sinai, in the east of Har Sinai, east of Sinai, not west of Sinai? So there are a couple reasons. Two unrelated to the question of the chuppah, but one. Number one, if you're east of Har Sinai, you're closer to, if you're traveling from Sinai, close to Eretz Yisrael. So there's a little nod and a wink to Eretz Yisrael, where Har Sinai should have been, at least we expect it to be, and one day will be, how Griezmann are able as a recreation of Har Sinai when they enter Eretz Yisrael. For whatever reason, the Torah is given in the desert, for many, many good reasons that Chazal amplify. But they have to be closer to Eretz Yisrael. And Ramban, famous Shittas Ramban, mitzvahs outside of Eretz Yisrael don't really count. So they're all dry runs for getting back to Eretz Yisrael. So as cosmic and as broad as Torah is, and as unrelated to time and place as Torah is, and that's why we don't accept this Ramban. Basically, that Ramban is wrong. We don't accept that Ramban because mitzvahs have relevance and currency no matter where you are. But obviously, it's a whole different experience when you're aligned in Eretz Yisrael, so that's to be close to Eretz Yisrael. A second reason I believe they have to be east is because if they're on the west of them, they're not going to be in the north or the south. So obviously, the two choices are east or west. If they're on the west, then who's watching Har Sinai? They. And no one else, because they're basically, they're the group watching there. But if they're on the east, then who's on the west watching? Who's west of Sinai? Egypt. Egypt and all of humanity. So Har Sinai is an event that's staged for everyone. So Jews, you go over there, you go to the east, and let the Egyptians, again symbolically, there are people living in Canaan, but they're pagans who basically are irredeemable. Mitzrayim is redeemable. There's a sense that Egypt is a cradle of cultural civilization, they could be redeemed, all these pyrotechnics in Machlis and Mitzrayim, where the lesson pyro to teach them. The, all these theological lessons, but they're not just punitive, but so Hashem is invested in teaching the Egyptians that monotheism, less so than the pagan savages of Canaan who were completely obliterated. So the Jews are to the west, and basically there's only one people watching it because the mezzanine is built, here's the mountain. Whereas if the Jews are to the east, then it's being presented to two groups, a group that's westerly, Egypt, and then the group, the Jews that are easterly. So there's an internationalization. But probably most importantly and most related to what I said, if the Jews are to the east, then what has happened already? How do you get to the east of the mountain if you're traveling from west? You have to circumnavigate the mountain. You have to travel around the mountain. It takes a while to travel around the mountain. Hard to know, B'chodesh Rishon, the first day they got there, but there's effort. By traveling around the mountain, you become more familiar with the terrain. So it becomes your home, it becomes your terrain. If you're coming from the west, so here's a mountain, you stop at a certain point, that's the mountain that Hashem will descend upon, fulminating thunder, lightning, and fire, and whatever. But if you've walked around the mountain already and taken your position from the east, then that's your mountain. And Hashem's coming to your home, to your chuppah, rather than you staying at a distance. Oh, there's the mountain of Hashem that we can't go up. We can't go up, but because there's so many layers to Har Sinai, so you can't go up the mountain, but they already own. It's a very delicate dance of intimacy and distance, of non-approach and approach. So they're already circling the mountain. When you circle a mountain, it's already something you're familiar with. You look at the landscape, you look at the terrain. So it's their mountain, that's why they're in the east. There's a three Rashis that highlight the wedding at Har Sinai. One, he says specifically, Lekras or Lekit. Two, he prunes the Gemara. The Gemara says, Hashem lifted the mountain, I'm going to bury you. No, he just lifted the mountain. We talked about burial. Three, they travel to the east. One other Rashi, since that took a lot longer than I thought. Quite a few Rashis to talk about, but why does the Aseret Dibros begin with Anochi? Why is it a strange word? Rashi doesn't fully amplify this, but it's strange on two levels. It's an odd word instead of an Hashem. But what I think Rashi's really getting to is, why is the first mitzvah to believe in Hashem articulated in a non-mitzvah syntax? Hashem should have said, believe in me, taminu li, tekablu alai, lo yeh lecha, kabed, zachar, lo. So all the dibros are, what's the declarative, what's the grammar? Got to get back to fourth grade. When you command, there's some command tense.
It's evil.
What?
It's evil.
Right. Trying to go back to my third grade teacher. Right? There's some English. So it should have been some command. Lashon Tziva. What? Why isn't there a command here? Why is Hashem basically speaking? It's conversational. And this conversational syntax led Gaonim to believe there's actually no formal mitzvah to believe in Hashem. Could you believe that? There's no mitzvah to believe in Hashem. Because it's a pre-mitzvah. It's so seminal that it's not a mitzvah, it's the foundation. Believe in Hashem, the whole Torah is pointless. It's not a mitzvah, it's a pre. Some experiences are too foundational to be sectionalized or cellularized as mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are cells in a beehive. What about the foundation of the beehive? It's resting. It's the nest of the beehive. Anyway, so Rashi talks about this, and he says there are two issues Hashem is trying to solve. One is that he appears to human beings, even to these Jews, in different manners throughout different stages. So at the Yam Suf, Hashem appeared as a warrior, Hashem Ishmael Chama Hashem Shemo. Whereas at Har Sinai, and Rashi believes that the end of Mishpatim really overlaps with Yisro, Machlokas Rashi Ramban. How does Hashem appear to the Jews in Har Sinai as described in the end of Mishpatim? Blue and white. Tachas Raglav Kimase Libnas Hasapir Uchetzem Hashemayim Latohar. Underneath Hashem was blue and some white. And Rashi says this refers to a Zakein Male Rachamim, an older man who is sympathetic, which is interesting because if I were to tell you to describe, or give me a graph, you know, say a police graph artist, they give me a rendition of an old man sympathetic, you'd say an old man with a beard, nice eyes, crying, smiling at you, giving you a candy. But for Rashi, sympathy is conveyed by identification with someone's plight. So when Hashem appeared in blue and white, they said, oh yeah, we had that, we had those bricks in Mitzrayim. They were the Libnasasapi, where the blue were bricks. Rashi says, Tachas Raglav, Kimase Libnasasapi, the bricks, Levanim are bricks. Oh, you understood what we went through. Hashem appeared to them somehow through bricks, and they realized that Hashem either was identifying with the suffering in Mitzrayim, and now they're Geula and white. So a lot of compassion is sympathy and identification, not just smiling at someone, but giving that person the sense that you understand what they're going through. And Hashem gave them the sense that he understood what they went through by coming in some way that looked like sapphire bricks and giving them the sense, I know what you went through in Mitzrayim, I know how hard it was for you. Don't worry, I know how difficult it was. But either way, as we go through life, we experience Hashem in different stages of our life, but through different prisms, because Hashem can't be visualized as one single entity, one single portrait. So we go through different, sometimes Hashem, we celebrate Hashem's triumphs that he gives us. Sometimes we suffer failure, frustration, anger, disappointment, uncertainty about Hashem. And in the pagan mind, that means there are different gods. There are great gods that help you succeed, and then there are terrible gods who are warlike and grotesque and punish you. So Hashem is saying, I'm the same person. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'm the same person. I'm the same being. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And he doesn't just use the word Anochi to punctuate that, but he uses it's more of a conversation. I would call this in our modern jargon, Hashem is the announcer, not just Hashem is the MC of Har Sinai. I'm saying Anochi Hashem Elokecha. By the way, here are the Dibros. So the word, it's not just the word Anochi, but the way Hashem says it, he's playing the role not just of the players on the field, but of the color commentator, of the announcers to the game, of the narrator. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. He's pulling the whole experience together. And the second concern that exists at Har Sinai is not just that Hashem appears differently, and appeared differently at the Yam Suf, and appeared differently as the Torah is about to be delivered. The Rambam writes about this. But Har Sinai was not a human experience because Torah was being delivered. So when Torah is being delivered, it's beyond human size, beyond human processing. A lot of angels descending, based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Samachas, Malachei Tzvakos, Yigodun, 22,000 angels. Rashi doesn't mention the angels, but Rashi talks about the sound of Torah. My voice follows certain scientific physical patterns. Sound waves have a certain length, have a certain pitch. You hear, it stops at a certain point. Torah isn't subject to the natural order. Torah is a voice of Hashem. Torah is in a different era. So the sounds were reverberating all over, the north, the south. The sounds weren't the normal sounds. The conversation wasn't normal. This was an otherworldly experience. It was an outer body experience. But you would have thought if there are sounds coming from the north and sounds coming from the west, and sounds coming from the east and the south, maybe there are different voices. Maybe there are different beings that are involved in this process of commanding man and creating religion for man. So it's built into Har Sinai that Torah is so beyond this world that it's going to have many different coordinates. And Hashem says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's me. It's one voice, one sound that's controlling them all. So the word Anochi and the strange syntax is meant to create the core of monotheism. There's only one being. And the reason that monotheism is so challenging is, A, because we go through different stages in our relationship with Hashem, and it's lazy. It's lazy to say there are different gods. Paganism is lazy. Monotheism is mentally challenging. To be able to loop together different experiences in you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and feel not just theologically that he's the same Hashem, but emotionally. Can you relate to Hashem the same way? When Chazal say, Kishem Shevarachim Olatov, Kach Varachim Olara, it's not just to know that philosophically it's the same Hashem, but emotionally I can relate to Hashem in the same way when I succeed, and when I, rather than to enjoy Hashem and then to be angry at Hashem, it's still Hashem, but can you create this emotional baseline, this emotional steadiness in your relationship with Hashem? Just like if we have, you know, some successfully married people here, we're all in the process of becoming successfully married, and if you ask people who get past a certain stage of marriage what's the secret of a good marriage, you probably say emotional steadiness, where your relationship is as steady and similar every day, rather than gyrating and oscillating from good to bad, bad to good, fights, good romance. When it's romantic, right? Romance can't sustain itself, so you're romantic, and then the next day you're fired, the next day you're not romantic. But when there's a steadiness where Monday feels like Tuesday, Tuesday feels like Wednesday, that's the goal of every relationship, to have consistency and integration. So can HaKadosh Baruch Hu be the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your mind? He's the same, you know, he's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu philosophically, but can be the same relationship when he's in Ishmael Chama and when he's a Zakei Mali Rachamim. Second of all, Torah at Har Sinai just is creating this false impression that there's so many different forces, so many different voices. Hashem starts by saying, "Anochi." Okay, we'll stop here. Good Shabbos. On Sunday, we'll learn a few more Rashi's from this. Okay. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, guys. You're welcome. Good Shabbos.